Hello, welcome to the Christian Ambition Podcast, and today's guest is AJ Cherian. So I know you have a lot of projects and businesses. How many is that?
I mean, I have a bunch of projects that go on, but I have four main businesses that I focus on, all in kind of different fields. One is in apparel, one is in a BPO firm, and then two are in marketing.
Okay. And are they all in the U.S.?
Yes, all of these are in the U.S.
The main ones. Okay.
The main ones.
Very cool. And so we met at Bob Jones University, and AJ is now the president of the Entrepreneurship Network, which would you like to explain what the Entrepreneurship Network is and what you're trying to do with it?
Yeah, the direction we're trying to take Entrepreneurship Network is more into this, you know, like professional networking organization built to connect budding entrepreneurs to other people who are a little bit further along in their journey so they can meet their mentors. And our slogan or our catchphrase is kind of training entrepreneurs for the master's use. And that's really what we're trying to do, train entrepreneurs for the master's use.
What ways are we able to use entrepreneurship for God? And what does for the master's use look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in India, and I grew up around ministry. My grandpa is a missionary in India. He runs a Bible college, two schools. There's a lot of, I've grown up around the ministry. But then my dad, on the other hand, was a businessman. And so I grew up around business as well. And what I saw between the business and ministry is how they seem like two separate things. But in actuality, they're two things that can work together very closely in a place like India, which is a red zone. And so the way I look at it, and I'll just explain it in my context, India is closing their doors to the gospel and opening their doors to business. That's an avenue for a lot of us to get in. So India has the ability to cut off ministry supplies to money pretty much instantly without reason.
Those are monies coming external.
External money, yes.
From India.
Coming from the US or Europe into India. They have the ability to pretty much cut that supply off immediately.
And they're doing that more?
They're doing that more. As time goes on, India wants to be the first Hindu nationalist country in the world.
Really?
Yes.
Is that stated in the government?
Yes, the government is very clear on that. Basically, the way I look at it is this model, current model, is not sustainable.
Which is, what? Explain that current model.
The current model is, you know, we raise funds here in the U.S. And we bring it in and we use it for missions and the growth of the gospel within India. Now, the need remains the same. We still need the growth of the gospel. Less than 1% saved. One in every six people lives in India. And India is 33% the size of the U.S. So the population density is huge. And so I think that it's very important. The need is huge. Less than 1% saved is a crazy number.
Yes.
And these people are really going to hell. It's not going to be, and it's a missed opportunity for us, you know, who are given this responsibility to go into the world and share the gospel. So the need is there. But I think the model of raising money abroad and then bringing it in is not sustainable because the government can just cut that off at any time. So the model that I'm trying to push more, which some people already do, but I'm just trying to
word out.
Get the word out, grow and mentor more entrepreneurs to kind of take on this model is a model of local business where we're, you know, kind of bringing in businesses into the country that are not just, you know, right now I think our business's mission model is, you know, I use a business to get into the country and then I just share the gospel.
Yep.
Right. But my proposition is we go a step above that and we say, hey, you know, you come into the country, you start a business, but you start a business that is profitable, right?
Yeah.
And you be self-supporting so that you can start other businesses to support other ministries and continue to grow and disciple, be tent makers, basically. And I think too often businesses' missions is not profitable. Now, there are two types of profit. You know, there's redemptive profit, profit for the kingdom, and then there's, you know, monetary profit. Mm-hmm. But they both work together, right? Without without money, because it's what the world, our fallen world runs on, it's a need. And I think to be completely dependent on, you know, the giving of others and also the security of our government, I don't think is a wise choice. So I'm proposing that we start more businesses that fund missions locally within within countries, you know, and start businesses here in the US that contract these businesses, give them business. So two of my businesses work with businesses within India to do work. And, you know, it's completely legal. And a business in India can choose where they want to spend their money and give their money. So my model is we have a business in India and we have a business here in the US.
Can you give specific examples? What are they buying and selling?
For example, my marketing agency, right? We have a marketing agency in India who deals and serves with some Indian clients. But also, I have a marketing agency here where I have US clients. I contract out my marketing agency in India and give them completely legal work, pay them a fair rate. My marketing agency in India has decided 20% of all of our profits are going to go to missions. So they can do whatever they want with that money. Because that's their corporate
social. It's inside India.
It's money that's earned for services given. It's not money that's just donated. So that's their money to use.
Yeah.
And they've decided they're going to use 20% of the profits to go into missions. Now that money can go wherever we need it to go for the growth of the gospel. And that's what I think we need more of. Whether it's in AI or marketing or it's in software or if it's in IT, wherever it is, that's I think a good model for the future.
Yeah. What if someone in the US is a missionary and wants to go to India, for instance? How would your model and their model work together? Because they're not a business person.
Well, I think that, like I said, there's two types of profit. I think we need to train people who are not necessarily business people. Because I think everyone can be a business person if it's purposeful for them. So I think that if they're a missionary and this is very, very purposeful for them and it's something that will help them get to their purpose and it's something they can learn. It's not something that is unteachable.
Yeah.
In a sense, you know, I think with the right mentors and the right, not even education, but right experiences, it can be learned. So maybe that is going to another plant where they have started a business and they're running a profitable business while having kingdom impact and seeing how they run and trying to emulate that as a missionary who doesn't have much experience or background, right? Not because you want to make a profit, but because you're purposeful and you want to make kingdom impact.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you need to be able to fund yourself. You need to be able to fund your family. You need to be able to impact communities. And the way you can do that is by starting profitable businesses that profit communities, but also is profit that you can use for kingdom impact.
Yeah. Right, because a lot of ministries or missionaries can go over there, but then they're always having to come back to the U.S. every other year or sometimes more often, sometimes less because of funding. And I've been talking to various missionary agencies and they're like, it's getting harder to raise funds a lot of times. Missionaries are having to spend half a year, sometimes a year, traveling over across all of America, church by church, trying to raise support. And it seems kind of inefficient a lot of times, just spending that much time where they'd rather just stay on the mission field, continue building those redemptive relationships over there. And so you've mentioned the idea of a redemptive profit.
Well, I think that's profit that's more purposeful outside of just, you know, revenue and cost. It is profit that is more aligned with your purpose. So my purpose, for example, is to start businesses that impact kingdom and community. What is profitable for me is maybe not starting a huge business that brings in, you know,
that's B2B and only B2B. Interacting with some executives.
But maybe that is type A profit, but redemptive profit is something that is very aligned with my purpose. Something that I'm saying, hey, this is what I feel like God is calling me to do.
And that's, this profit's going to support that.
Yes. And
directly.
And that's, this profit supports that directly. William Carey, who's a missionary to India, there's a quote from him, and I'm probably misquoting him, but it was something along the lines of, I'll go down into the pit if you hold the rope. And what we need is more rope holders so people can go down into the pit. And sometimes that's charitable giving, but sometimes it can be tent making. You know, people who are really holding the rope. And I think every Christian business should either be inside the pit or holding the rope for that redemptive profit side of things.
Yep.
because that's what God has called us to do. So yeah, that's what I think about redemptive profit.
So how your purpose is to impact kingdom and community, is that just giving money to other missions, or how are the other ways that you are impacting kingdom and community?
Yeah, I think that impacting community is extremely important. That's the second piece. So yes, it's faith comes by hearing, you telling mm-hmm. the gospel. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's helping people experience the love of Jesus through you. Some people say you might be the only Bible someone ever reads, right?
Hmm.
And I think that idea is, okay, I want to show people the love of Jesus yes. through the way that I do business.
Okay.
And trust me, the way, like a Christian is countercultural, mm-hmm. right? So there is something radically different about a Christian who's really living like Jesus calls us to live. And when you live out that calling, then you impact communities with this. What is this radical love and care and grace and excellent work
yeah.
and all of that combined, where they care, where you care more about the person than you care about the profit, right? It's not normal in business. Where your bottom line is not profit.
Yep.
You know, your bottom line is people impacted. And that's radically different. Right?
Right.
So when someone experiences a business that's not running for, you know, just bottom line profit, yep. obviously it is an important part mm-hmm. to keep it running.
That's how you grow. That's how you impact more people, is it needs to be profitable.
Exactly.
It's the wheel.
But that's not the purpose. And as long as we're clear and straightforward about that purpose, then I think we can impact communities. If you can't trust the messenger, you can't trust the message. And I think one of the ways that trust is established is by people experiencing your character. And one of the ways they can experience your character is through the way you do business. I think the way God calls us to do life in general is radically different, and it'll show through our business as well. And if we're able to do that, then I think we can impact communities.
That's really cool. A reason for this podcast is to talk about the why behind what we do. So often we listen to podcasts and you get advice from various business gurus, and it's good advice. It helps your business. But what's lacking a lot of times is the why behind what they're doing and the purpose behind the business. So hearing that the why is more important than the what. You're doing this so that you can build relationships with employees and then also the people you interact with through your company. What are some ways that you do business differently than competitors?
Yeah, well, I think that what you were hitting on about your why and your what are very important things. When I was getting started, when I first came to the US, I was extremely confused about my what. It felt like my what had been turned around. It was nothing. I had done all this planning over the last 10 or so years, what I wanted my life to look like. And it just seemed like I wasn't there. Nothing was going according to my plan. And it just felt like my what was all over the place. So then I'm thinking, okay, how do I figure out what I'm going to do, you know? I was talking to my brother maybe an hour ago, and he's going through this question. I went through it a little later in life, and I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I only picked business because my dad was in business, and sure. I figured, okay, you know, logical next step.
A lot of times that happens. Yeah. You just do what your dad does, because you're like, hey, I mean, I don't hate it.
Exactly. You know, I saw the way he did business, and I thought, man, it's pretty cool, and I picked business. But what I didn't realize for a long time was I needed to find my why before I found my what. Because God can give you the what. But if you're not listening to his why that he's given you, you're skipping a step.
Sure.
You need to figure out your why first, and then you can figure out what you're going to do to get there.
Yep.
Right? Because without knowing where you're getting, without knowing your destination, you can't start walking towards it. And that's why it's so important to get your why. And I think with the way we do business, to answer your question, the why has been way more important than the what, right?
Sure.
So when we take on clients and when we do business, we're not worried about, are we making huge profits? Are we doing this? You know, we're not corporate like that.
Okay.
And we're not even startup like that. You know, we're talking about are we impacting people? You know, are we establishing relationships? Because at the end of the day, I think people are the only thing that matter, right?
Okay.
If I have an unsaved client, right? Mm-hmm. Just by the way I do business, I think I can tell him more about the gospel than he would listen to if I just told it to him directly.
Mm.
You know, I could tell it to him directly, but it's something he's heard over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I could just sow the seed by my character and the way I do business with him, like I was telling you earlier, I had a challenging business situation, and my reaction is very important. My initial reaction in my head is anger.
That's probably what they expect.
Yeah, and that's
what
they expect. But if I take time and I pray about it, which I have been doing, and I respond with love, and I'm like, you know, I literally ended up telling them, don't pay me anything. Let me finish off because my work is more important than money, right? And I think that it ends up being, maybe they choose not to continue or whatever the situation ends up being. But I know that I didn't respond like everyone else was going to respond. And that's enough of a seed sown, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think the way you react, the way you respond, the way you treat people and what you prioritize is what makes you different. Because other people are prioritizing a bunch of different things, you know? And I think that it's very important what we prioritize, and I think it impacts everything else that we do.
Yeah.
Because your priorities kind of drive your actions.
Yep. How did you go about finding your why? What was most helpful?
I would say prayer. I could give you all these hacks and these things, and I know everyone says prayer, but really your why doesn't come from yourself. If it really is a purposeful why, it doesn't come from yourself. Your why is external.
God-given.
Right? Yeah, it's God-given. So purpose comes in the absence of pride. And I really had to just humble myself, and not just humble myself, God humbled me with the way my life was going.
Sure.
I was just like, I don't know what, I don't know where, I don't know why, I don't know who, I don't know anything. And God just brought me down to my knees and was like, hey, you're not in control. I clothe the lilies. I feed the sparrows. How much more do I love you? Mm-hmm. Like he says in Matthew 6, and rely on me. And I had to pray for purpose. And I'm telling you, Sven, it was not even completely unexpected. Every single thing that happened, you know, completely unexpected. But from starting the first marketing firm to, you know, getting involved with Threefold, and then eventually getting into Launchpad and doing all these different things, has just been God working. It's not something I've gone out and sought. And trust me, I've gone out and sought things, you know. I've cold called, I've done this, I've done that, and done everything for profit. But as soon as it became purposeful, God brought so many people into my life. And I look back at these situations, and I just think, there's no way I would have met them. No way in the world I would have met them without God. And on my own, I wouldn't have met them. I wouldn't have networked. I wouldn't have known people. It was all God. You know, I cannot take any credit because there's nothing I did. All I did was say, I don't know. I don't know what or why you want me to do anything. And, you know, how it worked out for me was I'm praying about this. And my grandpa tells me about the issues with funding around the ministry and how our number, which allows us to bring money, was up for cancellation. And that made me, and at this same point, I'm thinking about the business and starting the business, but I don't have a purpose for the business. It's just something that I'm thinking about starting. Oh, I think God's gifted me here. So I'm starting it. And then it clicked. For some reason, my grandpa told me to pray about this and it clicked. And I was like, why are these two things not working together? And that's where purpose came. And yeah, I'm telling you, like, what are the chances? Me and my grandpa usually don't have conversations like that.
Okay.
But he was at, you know, maybe a period of vulnerability more than he usually would be about our situation. And he shared with me, and we got on that call. Mm-hmm. It was January. Like, wow, you know?
Right. So you you humbled and you were asking, you were praying, you were searching, and then God brought this conversation about where he said, how do you pray about this? That's when you had that purpose. It's really cool.
The way I tell people to work at finding their purpose mm-hmm. is, number one, look at what God is calling all people to do.
Right.
Right.
Great commission.
Yeah, great commission as followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
What are things that all of us have to do? And then look at what God has gifted you with. And this doesn't mean just, you know, your spiritual gifts. It could be anything from, talents, but it could also be the people you know. Mm. It could be the time you have, your location. All of those things are gifts, right? Mm-hmm. So think of all of these things that God has gifted you with. And trust me, when you're doing that exercise, you become way more grateful for where you are in life and what God has given you. Mm. But you look at all of those gifts, and then you look at the intersection between what God has called all humans to do, followers of Jesus to do, and what gifts he's given you. And you figure out, how do these go together? And once you start to articulate, okay, there are maybe 20 ways that these could go together, right? Maybe it's in marketing, maybe it's in accounting, maybe it's in sports, you know, where 20 different ways that these things can go together. And then you pray and you refine that list down. And maybe it goes from 20 to 15, and then from 15 to 10. Mm-hmm. And eventually you hone in on this one thing that you think is going to be the most purposeful for you. And that's kind of what I really worked for me when I look at it more as an exercise than life. And it doesn't happen all at once.
Yeah.
It's not step one complete, step two, step four.
Yeah, yeah.
It's constantly praying, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, you pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
Next day you're at five less, and next day you're at 10 less, and 4 days. Now you're ready and you have your one, you know. It's praying, and then it's God answering, not just through the Holy Spirit telling you something, but through your interactions with other people, like with my
opportunities,
grandpa. Opportunities,
things that come up.
Doors that are open, doors that close.
And in the meantime, you're not just sitting around, right?
No.
You have to be doing things. That's how you test what I actually like doing. Oh, exactly. Is this a talent? Am I actually talented in this?
Yeah, testing your gifts.
While praying, but you need to be in action, right?
Oh,
you need to be doing things.
100%.
Yeah.
See, God has given us maybe 70 years on earth. Okay, if we're lucky, maybe 70 years. And we are all called to do the same thing with those 70 years in the sense of share the gospel and show the love of Jesus. Love your neighbor as yourself and love the Lord your God with all your heart. Love is not just an emotion, it's an action. And if you're not showing that action, then you're not fulfilling what God has commanded all of us to do. Mm-hmm. And that means showing that action to others, but also showing that action to God by obeying him in what he's commanded us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means using your gifts wherever you're at to be purposeful, because that's a purpose God's given to all human beings. Now, if you're going to refine your purpose down to your personal purpose, that's definitely something that you can do, and you go through the exercise and you do that. And through prayer and through time and through situations, God reveals that to you. But that doesn't mean that all the time before that, you just wasted away.
Yeah. No, my coach said something that was helpful. Action creates insight more than insight creates action. And I think that's applicable here. It's like you have to be doing things, and in the doing, you will gain insight. And when you do things, opportunity. Some people call it luck. We would think of it more as providence. If you just stay home and do nothing, opportunity can't find you. If you're out talking to people, if you're interested in something, you're not sure if maybe this is my purpose, but I think it would be a great idea to go talk to somebody who's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go be adding value to the world and be talking to people. And in that way, while you're praying, looking for it, the Lord can speak through those circumstances, those conversations, etc.
Yeah, I think that impacting kingdom and community is not optional, you know. So wherever you're at on your journey of finding your purpose, you should be striving to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. It's action.
Yeah. How have you, because you have several businesses, switching topics. You're still in college and part of various organizations and then four main businesses. And you've told me about quite a few other projects you're doing. How are you doing all those various things?
Well, one, I would say a good team. I have a great team that I work with pretty much on any business that I run. I usually have a very good partner who I work with, and we really architect out my responsibilities and their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I think there are situations where partnerships can go bad. There are also situations where partnerships can go good. And for me, where the thing I don't have is time.
We all, we have the same 24 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can only get so much done, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with the four businesses, if I have really good partners,
mm-hmm.
who say I can put in 50% effort, and they put 50% effort, but together we're getting 100% of the job done,
mm-hmm.
is how I usually run the businesses. And the only time we really run into issues is when either I'm not pulling all of my weight or they're not pulling all of their weight. And that's the only time I've really seen issues so far.
How are you finding those partnerships?
With people I trust, it's usually not a difficult decision. You know, like I said, it's character. It's people who have impacted me through their character and through the way they do life. Yeah, it's completely countercultural, and when I see that and when I experience the love of Jesus through them, and I'm like, okay, this is a good person to be a partner. You know, this is a good person to take this next step forward, because I know that, you know, you could say whatever, they go to whatever different situation, but their character stays the same.
Yep. Right? Does that mean you would only partner with Christians?
I think that unbelievers can have good character, and so I will partner with people who have good character. Now, if my business is very purposeful for kingdom work, I would not partner with an unbeliever. And for the most part, I try to stick to believers. But yes, I do think at that level, it's more character over their individual beliefs, because not everyone believes the same thing, but some people do have good character to make good decisions.
Tell me about your first business. How did that come about?
Well, I was working at Marco's Pizza, and the option was I was talking to my dad, and he's like, hey, well, you can either work at Marco's Pizza, or you could use some of the skills that you learned in high school and stuff like that, which I built a couple websites for a couple of people, did some internships, and did some marketing work eventually.
Freelancing. Yes.
And then I led a small team developing an app. While I was in high school, I did all of those things. And then I came to the US, and it was kind of cold turkey. And so I was kind of like, okay, you know, I don't like this working at the pizza place. I started calling people, just cold call, cold call, cold call, cold call. No results, cold emails, no results. Mm-hmm. And then eventually my first client was a referral. I'm doing all this cold calling, no results. Mm-hmm. And a referral comes in, and it's a lady who needs some help with her website and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started. And then eventually that grew a little bit. And then we started talking with Threefold. They needed leadership. I needed credibility, because at this point I'm 18 years old and no one really trusts me to do their marketing. So they're just like, you know, man, this all sounds great, but you're 18. So they needed someone to help lead their team. Mm-hmm. And I needed the credibility of a 20-year-old firm. So we partnered up, and that's how that partnership with Threefold came about. And then eventually, you know, just through networking and meeting God, bringing some people into my life, the other businesses kind of sprouted from there.
That is really cool. So what would your advice be to freshmen in college who are entrepreneurial? They're thinking, they're watching a whole bunch of videos on business and things. What should they be doing to start?
I would say do it. You know, the best way to learn is by doing it. And you will make mistakes. And trust me, I made so many costly mistakes. You know, if I told you all my mistakes, you would probably look at me and say, man, you're an idiot. But I'm telling you, I learned so much from him, and no book or no podcast or no YouTube video is going to teach me at the level that those mistakes taught me, you know? So don't be afraid to fail. I don't have the numbers, but I know that Dyson failed thousands of times before he built his vacuum. SpaceX, they were at their last launch before they were going to file for bankruptcy.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just Apple. Steve Jobs was kicked out of his own company. And so don't be afraid to fail. It's part of that journey, and just do it. It's not something that is going to hurt you in any way. If anything, it's going to give you experience, right? And so do it, whatever it is, whether it's a marketing agency, or I was talking to some guys who are working on AI and automation, right? And I was like, you know, we've been talking about this for 2 months. Let's learn and let's, you know, start talking to some people and say, hey, I'll offer you services for free. That's what I did. I said,
okay,
I'll build your website for free and you just pay me what you think it's worth. And it's because I knew the skills and I learned how to do it. If you're not able to take that first step, do the hard things, then it's hard to learn those skills and take them from, you know, an idea in your head to an actual situation.
The journey of 1,000 steps starts with the first one. It's do work for free so you get do excellent work, right? So then you can hopefully get a referral or at least a testimonial.
Yeah.
And then you can bank that and you can show this work to then get other clients. Maybe this isn't a good question, I don't know. Can anyone be a entrepreneur, or how do you know if you will do well as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think some people will say it's your ability to be organized. I know many entrepreneurs that are not organized.
Interesting, I hadn't heard that.
Some people will say, I think it's your ability to think.
Okay.
It's your ability to critically think. It's not about being able to do a task. It's about being able to solve a problem.
Break a problem down and say sometimes who, not how.
Yeah.
Who can actually solve this for me? Yes. I don't have to know how to solve all these steps.
Yes. And then be able to present that value. And I think that's what makes good entrepreneurs, people who are able to break down a problem into all these different steps and then present that value to a customer.
Right. It's not build the perfect business plan, right? how many business plans have you?
I have drawn up business plans, maybe two or three when I'm pitching to someone else. But internally, I'm not working off a business plan. I'm working off of a value plan. You know, how am I going to create enough value to be worth what I'm charging or worth what I'm... And then from there on, you know, we go into a marketing plan and how can we present this value to customers? And if I'm not providing value, I don't want to charge them for it. And that's my business plan.
Yeah.
You know, present and give enough value, if not more than what you're charging, so that the customer really goes away from that interaction and they're like, man, I just went in here. One of my clients he just asked for one website. And then I said, you know, you have four different businesses. Let's make one homepage website, you know, for all of your ventures, and then make separate pages for each of your individual ventures so they can have their own flavor and have their own weight for
own branding.
Yeah. And for the same price, we delivered so much more value to him, you know? So now he has really five sites, right? There may be five mini sites, you know, not super layered and things like that. He has so much more value for the money he paid me. And I was just thinking, okay, you know, maybe it's going to take me 25 hours instead of 20 hours. And it didn't take us 20 hours. I'm just saying example, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to take us 25 instead of 20.
Yeah.
But if that means that we can provide 80% more value with five hours, then it's a no-brainer and it fits into our business plan.
Yeah. I think it was Noah Kagan in the Million Dollar Weekend, where he's like, in order to capture $1 million of value, you have to give $1 million or more in value. So thinking value first is a great way instead of what is my product? Yes. You have to ask, well, who actually wants this product? Maybe nobody's. What is direct value that I can start off with?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it.
I think some things that aren't really spoken in church context a lot is ambition a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the making money, the business side of things. Hence why the title of this podcast, Christian Ambition. Maybe the question is, why do you think that is? Or why should it not be? Should we talk more about being ambitious as Christians?
Well, I think that in this, there's this line of being in the world and not off the world. Mm-hmm. And I think the fear with ambition is that we become too much like the world, right? Because I don't think that pride comes before the fall. I think that pride is the fall. And so that, I think that's where all that fear comes from when it comes to ambition and why it's not talked about much in the church.
Because they see a whole bunch of bad examples. And I think a lot of times the good examples don't talk about it because everybody assumes that if you are successful in business, that you've done it in the bad ways. So that's the only ones that make it to the news, right?
Yes, exactly. And so I think that what needs to happen more is people need to understand that ambition is good. We need ambition, right? Because our purpose is huge.
Yeah. And God, Matthew, go to the ends of the earth. That's pretty ambitious.
It is
really ambitious. You're starting in Jerusalem and you're saying go to the ends of the earth. And their world was like, you know, Europe. That's all they really knew. And then it spreads from there.
You look at Paul. That's an ambitious man, man.
Yeah.
So you look at so many.
He's like, I want to go to Spain. I've never been to Spain. I want to go to Spain. Yeah.
So many examples across the Bible. And you see a bunch of men on fire for God. You know, ambitious. He said he burned with zeal for the Jews. And he burns with zeal for God. And I think that zealousness, that ambition is something that we need to really bring back to our generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to be on fire for God and say, hey, it's okay to be on fire for God,
because
you're not doing it for yourself. And what we started targeting the fire instead of the for part. When it started being on fire for yourself, people decided to extinguish the fire.
Yeah, exactly. It's right. The what. They see a lot of the what, and like we already been talking about, the why is more important. If I'm ambitious and my talent is business, starting businesses, a lot of people see business, you're going to get caught in the love of money and you're going to be focused on that. But it's like, no. My why. I want to use business somehow to impact a meaningful impact on the Great Commission, on spreading the word. Mm-hmm. That's my why. And it just so happens that my what is business.
And
maybe your what is engineering. Maybe it's children's ministries. People's whats are different, but we have the same why, right? So anyone can be ambitious.
And so I think that purposeful fire for God is essential.
Yeah.
And that fire is ambition, right? That burning desire,
yeah,
you know, to
yeah,
to do what God is calling you to do. There's no shame in that.
Why should we just be like only give half our effort
exactly
for God? Like, I don't know. Nobody will actually say this verbally, but this is what it feels like. That unless if you are called to be a missionary or called to be a pastor, then it's like, okay, well, just go find your work and then give 10%. That's your calling. Raise a family and tithe. I'm like, I don't think so. I think we should do way more than just that. That's good. That's great. But let's do more than that. Let's see how we can excel in whatever that talent is.
I think Christianity sometimes becomes a Sunday church Christianity, whereas Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship with God, right? Mm. And a relationship doesn't only happen on one day. You know, it goes throughout the week and throughout your life. You know, as a Christian, God is not something that is a part of your life. He is your life. He is what you are working for. He is who you are surrendered to. And because you are surrendered to him, it's essential that everything that you do is at 100% and on fire for him. And you're doing what he's calling you to do.
And that's why it's important to get the why, the purpose straight before you have all this fire, lest you go really fast in a wrong direction.
Yeah.
How have you been able to check yourself to make sure that your why is correct, that the love of money, or I'm blanking on the verse now, but it is not drawing you, the diverse love of money temptations aren't coming your way.
I think the verse says the love of money is the root of all evil. And it's not money that's the root of all evil. I think it gets misquoted a lot.
Yes.
Money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money.
Yep.
Right? Because what you put on a pedestal in your life means you're taking God off that pedestal.
Yep.
So if you're loving money, you're not loving God. No man can serve two masters.
So how do we prevent? So we want to excel. We want to really do well in business, if that's your calling. And the scoreboard is generally dollar signs. Scoreboard of, am I growing? Am I having more impact? It's a lot of times growth in dollar signs. So that a lot of times can be confused with, well, are you chasing the dollar signs or are you chasing more redemptive profit?
Yeah. I think we need to have redemptive profit KPIs. We need to have key performance indicators that not just that we as leaders hold ourselves accountable for, but we have a community that holds us accountable for, right?
Like close friends,
mentors who are Christians who hold us accountable to these redemptive profit KPIs, you know? I think we have enough people who are holding us accountable for our normal KPIs.
Sure. Right?
But as soon as you come into something more purposeful, I think it's harder to have accountability on that, you know, because you're like, it's not as much in my control, but it is. And it's what you're accountable to God for, you know? So that you have a gospel-centered community, find people in your church, in, you know, people that you interact with, close friends, trusted mentors who have this the same understanding of the gospel to hold you accountable to what your redemptive profit KPIs are looking like.
You speak to finding mentors or any mentors in your life that have been helpful.
Yeah, I would say the biggest mentor in my life has been my dad. Me and him had a rocky relationship in high school because I wasn't a very obedient son, and I didn't know God. And I really didn't do the things that I had to be doing. So it was a lot of back and forth with me and my dad. Once I left home, I realized there's so much of this unrecognized mentorship. You know, I would say, man, dad, you give me a lecture every morning. But now I think back, and I'm not much older, but I'm just thinking, man, those lectures are some of the things I say unconsciously. They're some of the things that keep me going during the day, you know, when life got hard, those things that he told me are things that I still run on today, you know.
That is a blessing.
And so he's definitely been one of my biggest mentors. He's there to help me with business or with my personal life or with, you know, with anything that's going on. My dad has been one of my biggest mentors. And to be completely honest with you, I'm still working on finding my close mentors. I have my dad and my grandpa, and I trust them because they're family. But establishing that relationship, I think, takes time. And I've only been here for 2 years, but I've worked on finding those mentors. One of them is Kevin Oberlin, who's been sort of a business partner, but also a huge mentor. Dr. Cropsey has also been a mentor. But I think in all these different fields of life, you should find a mentor, whether it's finance or whether it's business or whether it's your spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. You should find a mentor to hold you accountable to in all of these areas.
Yeah. Do you go to them and like, hey, be my mentor? Or like, is it, how does that actually start?
Well, I think it starts with a relationship and then say, hey, can you hold me accountable?
Conversations, and then you realize there's somebody you look up to.
Yes. Yes.
And you're aligned in some ways.
Yes. And it's also somebody you're afraid of disappointing. Say, hey, you know, I want you to hold me accountable. I don't want to disappoint you.
Yeah.
Hold me accountable to this. You know, at the end of the day, we're all dancing for an audience of one. We're not trying to please people, right? As long as your goals are for that audience of one, as long as that your goals are for what God is calling you to do, there's no issue with having people holding you accountable to them. And so, yeah, find people it's going to hurt to disappoint and make them your mentors.
Really good. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think we covered a lot. What's our time look like?
I have no idea.
We're almost at an hour.
I haven't really figured out exactly how to land these things, but thank you, AJ, for being on the second episode. 1,000 to go. And we are doing this. I'm doing this till I interview Ken Ham on Top of the Arc. And that's my goal. I already have the connection to make that happen. I obviously just need to get better at asking questions and listening and talking. And we're going to continue to have conversations about merging ambition, whether that's business, leadership, productivity, whatever it be, with our Christian faith. And how does being a Christian actually change the way we do things or the why behind what we do things? And yeah, follow us anywhere where podcasts are and share this with a friend. If you found this, anything in here, insightful or interesting, that's how we grow. So there you go. Bye.